Hey everybody, welcome back to the Orange Chair Podcast. Today's episode is a brand new episode that will kick off our series about hyperautomation. So in this episode, we'll be giving a great high-level definition of what hyperautomation is and what hyperautomation is not. So in the chair today, we have Ben Vaughn, and I'm very excited because this is our second episode where I have a live person in the chair. So Ben, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I am excited to be in the chair here in the podcast room. I'm actually more excited about my exclusive coffee mug that I just got. So always enjoy a good coffee mug. So yes, as Alex mentioned, my name is Ben Vaughn. I am a father, a husband. My wife Amber and I have been married almost 15 years this May. I've got two sons, 10 years old, 7 years old, got a 10-month-old lab, so our days and weekends are filled with practices, basketball, baseball, track, cross-country, everything. So I'm a graduate of the national championship-winning University of Georgia. I was born the same year, actually, that we won our last football championship, so this is the first national championship of my life. I know everybody here at Keymark is a Clemson fan, so they've been rubbing that in since 2016, but it's nice to finally have one. So as far as work goes, I'm the Director of Solutions Architects here at Keymark. I've been here for 16 years now. Started as a sales assistant back in 2006, basically just assisting the sales team. Probably have a few customers that are listening to this who remember 2006, Ben. So from there, I became a solution architect at Keymark, kind of worked my way up there and eventually built a team of amazing solution architects that we have here that, most people listening to this have probably worked with before. So to kind of define what my team does, we're really responsible for bridging the gap in between the sales team and our professional services team. So we work with all the account executives to come in to prospective customers or existing customers, help evaluate new solutions to kind of figure out how we can help solve those problems. So, as part of that, we provide conceptual demos of software, essentially develop the statement of work for the technical side of things. And then once the customer decides to move forward with that, we are the people who work with the technical team to kind of transfer that knowledge and just basically make sure there's continuity between what was sold and what was actually implemented.
Great. So I love to start my episodes by asking everyone a fun fact about yourself. Can you tell me a fun fact?
Well, I'm known for a lot of different things. known for my clumsiness. I have a bit of a clumsy streak, some resulting injuries from that, some various falls and things like that, but one of the things that probably most people know me for is I'm a bit of a beer nerd. So I enjoy kind of being able to try different breweries, try different beers, especially when I travel, which COVID kind of hurt that a little bit. But based on my tracking, I've had, and I checked this earlier, 5,746 different unique beers that I've tracked.
Wow, that's a large amount of beers. So do you have a favorite one, anything that sticks out?
Not really, actually. I'd say my favorite brewery is located in Athens, Georgia, where I went to school. They do make one of my favorite beers is Creature Comforts Brewing. So that's probably my favorite out of all of them. But I enjoy trying new things.
And was there ever one that you just tried and you're like, I cannot finish that, it's terrible?
Probably not.
Love it. Well, great. Well, we'll go ahead and jump into the episode. So okay. Just to start, hyperautomation is such a buzzword around our industry right now. So I'm wondering, can you give us a high-level definition of what hyperautomation is, from Keymark's perspective?
Sure. So, typically the industry analysts out there, put out these big lengthy definitions of certain words, and we always kind of have to turn around and take that and put it back into regular language to kind of explain what that is. But in this case, actually, Gartner's definition of hyperautomation is actually pretty spot on for kind of what it is. So I'll start with their definition and kind of break that down just a little bit. So their definition is the hyperautomation is a business-driven, disciplined approach that organizations use to rapidly identify, vet, and automate as many business and IT processes as possible. Hyperautomation involves the orchestrated use of multiple technologies, tools, or platforms. So, I think that's a really good definition, but there's some key terms in there that kind of I really want to focus in on. The first of those being business-driven. So, nowadays solutions are really starting to be driven more by business users than IT. So in the past, IT was pushing down, hey, here's this new application you have to use for this particular problem that you need to solve. And business users kind of accepted that. So now, business users are more savvier to what technology is out there and what exists out there. They're talking to other people or the organizations, and they're coming back to IT now saying, hey, I need an application to solve this problem, or I found this application. It does what I needed to do. So it's being driven by those actual business users now. The other words, you know, discipline and orchestrator to mention in there. So what that means is hyper-automation strategy has got to be deliberate. I mean, you can't just implement things in different silos. You can't do it in a disjointed fashion. You know, you got to be disciplined about that. So the most successful people we've seen doing this, you know, they're putting centers of excellence out there to kind of oversee the rollouts of those technologies. They're funneling requests back from the business users through those centers of excellence. So, you know, making sure that you're really focused on what you're actually doing is a major part of that. The other one that I'll mention is rapidly identify. So, you know, business users are typically pretty aware of where inefficiencies are, but you need to be able to identify other processes they may not be aware of that, you know, and where those areas are for automation. So you can use tools like process and task mining to kind of go out and see what's happening in various different processes, figure out where the bottlenecks are, figure out what's repetitive, and be able to kind of automate those. So using technology to figure out where you can identify those various different areas.
Great. So yeah, you mentioned like process mining and some different things like that. What are the different elements to hyperautomation?
Sure. So per Gartner, you know, they say artificial intelligence, machine learning, event-driven software architecture, robotic process automation, or RPA, business process management, integration platform as a service, low-code or no-code tools, packaged software, and there's just other types of decision and process and task automation tools. So that's kind of how they wrap everything up. So at Keymart, you know, we work with all of those, but we kind of view the components of a hyper-automation solution really as kind of the core element, which is case management, document management or workflow and BPM. So being able to manage all that information, route that information, you know, use artificial intelligence to kind of make decisions about that information. So that's really kind of the core of any hyper-automation solution. But then you need to be able to feed information into that core. So if it's paper information coming in, you know, being able to OCR that, use machine learning to figure out where data is. If it's a form that's out there, you know, being able to use electronic forms to gather that information, but it's all got to feed back into that core. And then using RPA kind of around that to automate those repetitive tasks that people are doing at a base level, but also tying RPA into other things like machine learning and artificial intelligence to be able to make business decisions. And then I mentioned earlier, you know, being able to analyze the data to find those inefficiencies. So using process mining or task mining to take a holistic look at all the processes, figure out where we need to do that. But then also being able to just look at other ancillary technologies. So different technologies that may help, you know, just a very specific area, but tying those back into a hyper-automation solution.
Yeah, so, you know, RPA is a term that's been around for a while, whereas hyperautomation is something relatively new. And I think, you know, in the past, I've seen people interchange those two terms, and they're saying that they mean the same thing, but it seems like they're not the same thing. So what are the differences between just hyperautomation as a whole and RPA as a process?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, just because you have RPA doesn't mean you have a hyperautomation solution, right? I mean, RPA, as I mentioned, is a piece of that, but it's also a key piece of that. So I feel like, you know, RPA kind of coming out is really what brought hyperautomation to the forefront. I mean, a lot of these technologies have been out there for a while. You know, here at Keymark, we've been doing a lot of these technologies for years, but RPA kind of came forward as the glue that's going to hold all those pieces together. So, you know, RPA being able to tie all of those tools together and kind of orchestrate the communication between them, you know, before RPA was really a thing, if you needed to programmatically get data out of a system or into another system, you basically had to rely on all the applications to have an API or some other integration method that would play well together. But, you know, with RPA, those systems can now work together seamlessly with really little or no code to do that. And then, you know, being able to use RPA to replicate manual processes that, you know, you previously needed a human to do. So, you know, while it's you know, not a hyperautomation solution as it stands, it's a key piece to building out any hyperautomation.
Yeah, so you mentioned that there's multiple components and how they all work together to create a hyperautomation solution. So how is using multiple components all together, how does that an advantage for an organization?
Yeah, so, you know, as I mentioned with RPA, you know, each individual component itself is going to provide efficiencies, right? But you're really going to see the improvements, you know, whenever you start using them together. So kind of simplify all of this a little bit. So let's think about a grocery store. So anybody under 35 may not get this reference, but back in the older days, you know, if you went to a grocery store to buy something, cashier had to take that. They had to key the prices into a cash register to get a total. customer paid with cash and they walked out the door. You know, credit cards came about. You know, then you had to kind of evolve and get an imprinter for that credit card. So, you know, somebody put the credit card in the machine, swiped it, and made a carbon copy of that credit card. They had to go into the back and kind of process that later. So, you know, that's kind of one step, one element to make things better. And then, you know, the barcode scanners came about. So I'm no longer having to key in that you know, that box I'm buying was $3.95. I'm scanning a barcode and it's doing that for me automatically. You know, electronic credit card processing came about, so the carbon copy went away, and now I'm processing credit cards electronically. My POS system is all electronic. So those are all various different components, but, you know, eventually they got combined together to make one overall solution, which if you walk into a grocery store now, you've got a self-service kiosk where that person walks in, they perform their own labor. They scan their own groceries, they swipe their own credit card, they print out their own receipt. So, you know, by using all those technologies together, the grocery stores became extremely more efficient and more automated. So, you know, there's other technologies on the outside of, this, of that as well. So, you know, digital coupons, loyalty programs, and things like that that have all, you know, created an enhanced customer experience. So all of those pieces on their own help, but as they work together, it's where you really get the efficiencies. So I'll kind of go through, you know, each of those components that I mentioned earlier and talk about what they can do together. So, you know, at the core, so every organization's got various different systems that have data in them. So it could be an ERP system, could be a CRM system, could be a service ticketing system or whatever. You know, there are systems that contain data. But no matter who you are, I can guarantee there are still massive spreadsheets sitting out there somewhere that's got data just sitting in them. There's older applications like Access databases. There's documents sitting on file shares. So those are kind of the areas where we really want to focus on for hyperautomation. So, you know, building out a core system to properly manage all that data. I mean, really, that's the first step of any true hyperautomation journey is being able to manage that information. Where does it go? You know, if I'm using RPA, but I've got nowhere to put it, I'm sticking it in a spreadsheet, I'm sticking it in a file share, am I really being that, you know, that much more efficient? So I need a place to put that. I've got to build out proper taxonomy for that to understand what that information is, how it's related to other information as well. Once you get to that point, I mean, you can start using, you know, workflow to start automating some repetitive processes, using artificial intelligence to figure out what decisions can be turned over to a computer. So I've got a document that came in that's over a certain threshold, therefore it needs to go an amount threshold, therefore it needs to go take this certain path. I've got a contract that comes in, and because of the type of contract, it needs to be routed this direction. So, you know, artificial intelligence is not a big scary word. That's just simply telling a computer, hey, when you see this, do that. You can also start taking, you know, AI to the next level, so doing things like natural language processing. So, you know, say I'm in an organization that's got a customer feedback email address. I've got people sending in emails. You know, I can use workflow to push that out to a natural language processing engine that looks at it and says, hey, is this a happy email? Is this an angry email? And then kind of categorize and prioritize those as needed to push them back through the workflow. So that's really the, sort of the core that everything else goes around, is having a central place to manage that information. But you need to get data into that core, right? So, you know, what I try to tell people there is try to eliminate the paper as much as possible. So, you know, how many paper forms are sitting out there in your organization that somebody is keying in data from that form into some sort of system? You know, even if you've got a fillable PDF, what are you doing with those? You know, somebody's probably still keying that data in somewhere. So being able to replicate those forms as electronic forms, you know, letting you feed that data directly into the back-end system. You know, paper's never going to go away. It's always going to be required. There are going to be people who just don't use electronic means. But, you know, using tools such as optical character recognition to read the data off of that paper and automatically put it in the back-end system. So with OCR, you know, the typical thought of that has been like, okay, I read data off a certain area on a document, right? So by using things like machine learning and artificial intelligence, you can actually train applications to train those algorithms to identify, you know, what is this document and where is that data on the document, regardless of where it might exist physically on the document. So, you know, those models and those algorithms can get smarter over time as well. So think of it as, you know, you've got a new employee who's coming in and you're training that person on where to find information on a document that they've got to key into a system. This is the same thing. I mean, you're training, you know, a computer algorithm to find that information. So it gets smarter as it goes as well. And there's other technologies that can help with things like that, like, you know, mobile capture. So I've got customers or constituents that need to submit a document to me. Rather than them mailing it in, they take out their phone, take a picture of it, and that pushes it straight in. I kind of mentioned earlier, but, you know, RPA is also a huge component of all this. So, you know, using RPA to replicate those manual tasks, that, you know, those things are probably being performed by high-value employees. You know, a lot of times people hear RPA and robots, and they're like, oh, you know, they're going to take our jobs. They're going to take everybody's job. And that's just not the case. I mean, I've been to organizations where I've seen employees who have been there for 20 years, and the first thing they do in the morning is they pull out a big binder, and it's got usernames and passwords in it, and they go out to 20 different portals and download information from each one of those portals. You know, that person has a ton of business knowledge, a ton of knowledge about the organization, and they're spending their time doing menial tasks that they're probably not really happy with because it's boring, it's not fun. So, you know, taking and finding tasks like that and turning that over to a software robot to go out and do that, because it's the same thing every day. You know, that person now has 2 hours a day freed up to actually provide value to the organization rather than just doing, you know, manual tasks that mean nothing. So, you know, you can also use RPA side by side with a worker. So it's not just a back office thing, right? So think about a customer calling into an organization. You know, a rep answers the phone and I tell the rep, here's my name, here's my account number, whatever. That rep's probably going into, you know, a CRM system and entering that information, going to their accounting system, billing system, or whatever to pull up all that information. You know, with RPA, if I've got my my robot sitting on my desktop, I type in that information once. You know, the robot goes to each of those applications, pulls all that data, pushes it right in front of the screen for that rep to look at, and, you know, now they have everything they need in a single view. So just a couple different ways to utilize RPA as part of that solution as well. Then I mentioned it earlier, too, with analytics. So being able to identify process bottlenecks that are ripe for automation. So using those process mining, the task mining, where I can go out and see, you know, what users are performing the same task day after day. You know, that's how I'm going to know that that may be a good candidate for RPA. If I use process mining to look at the full journey of a case or a document or something like that, I can see the scenarios where a bottleneck's occurring. And now I know, okay, let's focus on that because this particular thing is making processes take three times longer than they normally would. So using those kind of tools to go out there and find that information are going to really kind of help to the overall hyper-automation. And then I mentioned, too, the other tools, just kind of ancillary tools. So one of the areas that we've kind of really seen come up the past, I guess, 2 years now is virtual collaboration. So, you know, COVID kind of accelerated the adoption of that, obviously, because people don't want to be in person anymore. But really what that means is that, you know, customers and constituents can now interact over video and audio completely remote to gather information that would have typically been done in person. So kind of the most obvious example of that is an insurance company, right? So I got into a fender bender, filed a claim with my insurance company. You know, previously they would have sent a claims agent out to take a look at my car and kind of document the damage, take pictures of it, write it all down. Well, with virtual collaboration, you know, I submit that claim, I get a text message that says, hey, click here to talk to your agent or to talk to the adjuster. I click that link. I'm now one-on-one video chat secure with my claims adjuster. They're telling me, you know, turn your video on. They're watching my video. They're taking pictures as we go, collecting data, collecting information. And it's a better experience for the customer, better experience for the agent. You're not having to pay the money to send somebody out there. So it's a just kind of a great example of an ancillary technology. And I mean, we've seen it other places too. So government, you know, government, if I'm receiving services from my local government in the past, I've got to go in and sit down at a desk and interview, provide documentation maybe on a monthly basis or something like that. But using virtual collaboration, I'm able to do all of that electronically. Have that interview via video, provide documentation and all that as well. So, you know, just one example of kind of a non-traditional tool that can be used to help that. But, you know, that's kind of a bit of a lengthy overview, but all the various different components of hyper-automation solution.
Yeah, so there are, you know, tons of different technologies and solutions that you just mentioned. So what is needed for a successful implementation if somebody wanted to get started now?
Yeah, so there's, you know, we kind of say there's really three areas to focus on, which is initiate, build, and execute. So by initiate, I mean there has to be a clear vision established. So that vision needs to align with the strategic priorities of the organization. So it's got to really support that overall vision. You know, what are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to get higher margins? Are you trying to reduce overhead? Are you trying to just improve customer satisfaction? So, you know, what do you want to accomplish in year one, year three, year five? So you got to be specific about, you know, what those goals are to be able to be successful with that. As far as building it out, you know, the biggest thing I can say there is implement an effective center of excellence. You know, make sure that the people within that center of excellence have the right skill sets and they're empowered to do their job. That center of excellence has got to have executive buy-in so that it can actually act within the organization. So executives need to be involved, and the people within the COE need to have the right skill sets. You need to have business analysts in there. You need to have architects in there. You need to have developers, change managers, and the executives as well. You know, you really want to make sure that as you're building this out, you keep the business involved. I mean, they're going to be your greatest asset to provide information about where those inefficiencies are. And then the third one being execute. So, you know, think big, think the bigger picture in the end, but start small. So find quick wins that build momentum and get people excited. You know, you don't have to boil the ocean at the beginning. You just need to start finding processes that can give you a rapid ROI, you know, improved customer employee experience or both. You know, keep change management in mind as well. It's going to be a change for people. You know, you need to set those proper expectations. You need to be transparent with your business users so that they trust you. And then use analytics along the way to be able to qualify, you know, quantify those efficiencies that you gain, so you can point that for point to that for future projects. You know, other things too: training, support. Make sure that you're spending money, investing in getting people trained, and continuous training as well, not just a one and done. And make sure you build a good support team out that's going to resolve any issues that arise. There are going to be issues. There are going to be issues with anything. So having a good support team there, make sure that those issues are resolved quickly and people are kept happy.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about this at the top of the episode, how hyperautomation is the new thing now. And I think that, you know, there may be the tendency for people to say, well, that just seems too new. It seems like too much of a big endeavor for me right now. But, you know, we at Keymark believe that it is something that's important. So, you know, why should somebody consider hyperautomation now for their organization?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the commercial sector and you don't have a hyperautomation strategy, you can pretty much guarantee your competitors do. You know, they're out there looking at this and trying to make ways to make their business better as well. So, you know, you think about a couple of well-known video rental businesses that I won't mention. You know, one of those stayed with business as usual, assuming that consumers are just going to keep walking into the store and renting a DVD or a video and returning it a few days later. You know, the other one said, hey, let's find a way to automate all this. Let's use technology to give a better experience to people. You know, send the videos directly to them, eventually lead to streaming. So look at it now, and one of those exists and one of them doesn't. So, you know, you got to adapt or die. I mean, you got to get out there and make sure you're in front of all this. And really, I mean, you know, consumers, constituents, they expect it to be in place. I mean, you know, they don't want to have to walk in and fill out a paper form. They don't want to have to, you know, call in and sit on hold to talk to somebody. They want to do everything at their fingertips, pull out their phone and interact with whoever that may be. And they want, you know, to be updated throughout the process. They want to know what's going on, and they want to feel like, you know, that experience is tailored to them rather than just, you know, completely manual.
Ben, thank you so much for giving us such a great overview of hyperautomation. And as our time comes to a close today, do you have any final thoughts? Is there anything that, you know, I asked that you'd like to elaborate on, or is there anything I didn't ask?
You know, just for the audience, just to kind of, you know, as you mentioned earlier, this is the first in a series of these podcasts, right? So I kind of hit on all of these at a high level. You know, we're going to be having future podcasts that go into more in depth on each one of these and explain those a little bit deeper. So, you know, keep an eye out for those in the future. A shameless plug, but people listen to this podcast, I mean, you know, they're not alone as they begin this journey. If it's new and it's scary, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. We can help identify those processes. You know, we can help with standing up centers of excellence and things like that. So, you know, we've seen what works and we've seen what doesn't work. So, you know, feel free to reach out to us and we'll be glad to help you, you know, however we can.
Well, thank you, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you for joining us on the Orange Chair Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Keymark and is produced by Clay Tootin and me, your host, Alex Frazier. For more information on RPA, please visit our website at keymarkinc.com/RPA. Again, that's keymarkinc.com/RPA. Never miss an episode by subscribing to our podcast channels wherever you listen to podcasts. And also, like and subscribe on Instagram and Facebook at The Orange Chair Podcast. Want to get in touch? Send us an email at toc@keymarkinc.com. That's toc@keymarkinc.com.